Top stories, anger boiling in the West Bank in the wake of Israel's deadly crackdown. The Palestinian Authority urges the international community to provide protection for the Palestinians. A two-month truce goes into effect in war toward Yemen. The Ansarullah movement says it's committed to the ceasefire as long as the other party adheres to it. Also ahead, Ukrainian troops retake control of all regions in Kyiv as Russian forces make a rapid retreat from areas around the capital and the city of Chernihiv. Welcome to the program. Our top story, tensions running high in the occupied West Bank amid Israel's violent raids and deadly shootings in Palestinian villages and towns. Palestinians, mostly youth, hit the streets chanting anti-Israeli slogans. Ten Palestinians have been killed and dozens arrested in Israeli crackdowns that began earlier this week. The Palestinian Authority has strongly condemned the killings and reiterated its call to the international community to provide protection for the Palestinians. Earlier, resistance groups, the Islamic Jihad and Hamas, issued strong warnings to Israel after its forces opened fire on a vehicle, leaving three Palestinians dead in the early hours of Saturday. Hamas described the killings as a cowardly assassination and said the regime cannot guarantee its security by killing Palestinians. Islamic Jihad identified the victims as its members and said that such atrocious acts will not go unpunished. Author and journalist Robert Fantina believes that a Palestinian Authority security coordination with Israel gives the regime a free hand to commit crimes against Palestinians.
First of all, with the sacred month of Ramadan, more and more people want to be able to worship at the Al Aqsa Mosque, and of course, Israel does not want this to happen. So they are, anything that is indicating more people going to Jerusalem, going to that area, is going to cause Israel to claim they have security issues, and they have to perform these mass arrests and these extrajudicial killings, which are completely unjust and completely in violation of international law. Additionally, the PA has said that, has condemned these killings, but that's hypocritical because Mahmoud Abbas is complicit in Israeli crimes against Palestinians with his so-called security coordination that his organization, the PA, has done with Israel for many years. If that security coordination were to cease, then the occupation would be much more difficult for the Israelis to maintain. But at this time, during this sacred month, these killings, these arrests, these night raids are even more appalling than they are under other circumstances.
People in the Gaza Strip are observing yet another month of Ramadan under tough conditions due to the inhumane Israeli siege. Our correspondent Ashraf Shannon reports.
Some 2 million Gazans are observing another holy month of Ramadan under the Israeli blockade for the 16th time in a row. Muslims around the world enjoyed this holy month while people in Gaza struggled to observe it under inhumane conditions. People in the tiny coastal enclave have limited access to food and they are also denied the right to freedom of movement. During this holy month of Ramadan, most Gazans are impoverished as their incomes continue to dwindle because of the crippling Israeli blockade.
The situation in Gaza, especially during the holy month, is very difficult. Poverty and unemployment rates are very high, and people can hardly afford to buy food to prepare their meals and break their fasting.
People usually shop for food items to prepare their iftar meals a few hours before iftar time, which takes place at dusk. Gazans, meanwhile, find it very hard to prepare their fast-breaking iftar meals due to the harsh economic conditions. According to UN reports, the majority of people living in the Gaza Strip are receiving some sort of aid to survive. Unemployment and poverty rates have skyrocketed, and poor people have been getting poorer year after year.
Israel work against the international law. The siege is continued at the time we are in the beginning of Ramadan. Blockade means poverty. Blockade means high average of unemployment.
Experts say the Israeli regime has been fueling misery and suffering in the tiny coastal sliver.
Thousands of Gazan families can't afford to buy food to prepare their Ramadan meals amid the dire economic situation. They mainly blame the suffering on the Israeli blockade. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Yemen says it will commit to a UN-brokered ceasefire with the Saudi-led coalition as long as the other side adheres to it. Army spokesman Yahya Sari' made the announcement in a tweet. According to the United Nations Special Envoy for Yemen, the two-month truce began at 1,600 GMT, that is. All offensive military operations, including ground, aerial, and naval attacks between the two sides, will be halted under the ceasefire deal.
As Yemenis are marking the holy month of Ramadan, a new truce was announced by the United Nations Special Envoy for Yemen to help the humanitarian situation in the country. The parties agreed to a nationwide ceasefire for 2 months, in addition to suspending all sorts of aerial attacks from both parties. The agreement includes opening Sana'a Airport for 2 flights a week from and to Egypt and Jordan only, and allowing Yemen's fuel ships to arrive at Hudaydah Port. However, observers say this agreement is the result of the recent attacks of Yemen's armed forces against Aramco facilities across Saudi Arabia.
I think, of course, those latest attack against Saudi Arabia and as well in the last few months against United Arab Emirates, it has forced Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates to accept this truce. But it will be really clear in the coming days and week, will they accept this and will they, because there have been many like agreement that has been signed as an example in Stockholm. But still at that time, because Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates were not part of this agreement, they have not signed and they were not mentioned in any of those agreements. That's why they have actually not respecting them.
In addition to the war, Saudi Arabia has been tightening the all-out blockade it imposes on Yemen and has prevented Yemen's fuel ships to enter the country. This has worsened the situation in war-torn Yemen, which is already going through the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the UN.
Despite the tragic humanitarian situation of their country, Yemenis say there has always been light despite all the darkness. They believe the UN brokered agreement may lead to a comprehensive political solution as the Saudi war must come to an end. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Political commentator Hossein Al-Bukhaiti joined us earlier to walk us through why he believes the truce in Yemen will halt.
I think that this ceasefire, it could maybe hold because it was directly signed between Sana'a and Saudi Arabia with the mediation of the United Nations and as well of Omani government. But because if you see the previous ceasefire, as an example, a Stockholm agreement, which was had a truce agreement in Hudaydah, it was signed by Sana'a and as well by Yemeni parties who are located now in Riyadh. That's why it was not kept by the Saudi coalition, because they always have been bombed Hudaydah many, many times and always blame that is Sana'a who is breaking this deal, and they are using always the so-called Hadi government to put blame on Sana'a. But because as well this deal, it had happened after maybe a week or more of one of the largest ballistic missiles and drone attack and cruise missiles attack against Saudi Arabia, which has targeted many Saudi oil infrastructure, especially the oil plant in Jeddah, and which has caused a huge fire. That's why I believe that Saudi Arabia now, they have actually understood the message that Sana'a is now is well equipped to attack Saudi Arabia. And I believe if Saudi Arabia will not keep this truce or will break the truce, Sana'a will not be waiting for the blames or for the United Nations statement who to blame for not keeping this truce. They will directly attack Saudi Arabia, and I believe there will be a major attack.
It's day 39 since Russia started its military operation in Ukraine. The Ukrainian president says Russian forces are withdrawing from the north, but they could seize eastern and southern parts of his country.
our defenders continue to regain control of localities in Kiev and the Chernihiv regions. We are strengthening our defenses in the east and the Donbass. We are aware that the enemy has resources to put pressure on the eastern part of our country. What is the aim of the Russian armed forces? They want to seize both the Donbass and the south of our country.
Senior Ukrainian official has already confirmed that government troops have regained all areas around Kyiv. That's after Russia recently pledged to cut back operations around Kyiv and another city to boost mutual trust in negotiations. Meantime, the Russian Defense Ministry says an operation to evacuate citizens from the besieged city of Mariupol has failed. Moscow puts the blame on the International Committee of the Red Cross, which was tasked with the evacuation process. On Saturday, seven humanitarian corridors were opened in several besieged regions for a day. Ukrainian officials say only 4,200 people could be evacuated from the frontline areas. Meanwhile, on the diplomatic front, Ukraine's top negotiator says Moscow has agreed to key Ukrainian proposals, raising hopes that the talks are moving forward. David Arakhamia says the Russian side has agreed verbally, but he did not give details on the terms of the proposals. He said, however, that Moscow has agreed in talks that a referendum on the neutral status of Ukraine will be the only way out of this situation. There was no immediate comment from Russia. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said on Saturday that talks with a hostile Ukraine are not easy, but favored the continuation of the process. The two sides have held several rounds of talks, and the next one is yet to be announced. The Ukrainian negotiator has indicated that any future meeting between Russian and Ukrainian presidents will take place in Turkey. Now, Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan points his finger at the United States ahead of a no-confidence vote against him in Parliament. We discussed Washington's possible role in Pakistan's politics in our news review program. Take a listen, please.
Pakistan's embattled prime minister has accused the U.S. of backing regime change in his country. Imran Khan says the move to remove him from power is blatant interference in the domestic politics by the U.S. He's facing a no-confidence vote Sunday, with an opposition claiming to have the necessary votes to oust him. White House has denied the U.S. is seeking to remove Khan from power. In a sign of division between the Pakistani government and military, Army Chief General Qamar Javed Bajwa said Islamabad seeks to expand its relationship with Washington. This a day after Islamabad protested to the U.S. embassy over alleged interference in its internal matters. Joining us now for the news review program is Mr. Zafar Bangesh, director at the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought from Toronto, Canada, and Firas Al Najim, manager at Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, also from Canada, joining us from Ottawa. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. Mr. Bangesh, I guess we're going to start with you. We know that Imran Khan has a coalition that he rules with, the Mujahideen Qaumi Movement. Pakistan is supposedly to leave that coalition, leaving it without enough votes to rule. He's putting it on outside forces. From your perspective, how much of that goes back to Washington?
I think there is no doubt that there is considerable evidence to suggest that Washington is involved in getting rid of Imran Khan, because they see him as too independent. They see him as not submitting to American dictates and demands, because Imran Khan wants to maintain an independent foreign policy, which was evident in his visit to Moscow on February the 24th, the day the Russian forces got involved in Ukraine. And of course, Pakistan's close relationships with China, which again is seen as a threat by the United States, because the U.S. is basically trying to subdue both China as well as Russia. And that seems primarily to be the case, that the U.S. Wants to get rid of Imran Khan. And there is also no doubt in my mind that, regrettably, the opposition politicians, the vast majority of them, are thoroughly corrupt. They are willing to sell themselves for a few million dollars. And there is ample evidence to suggest that they have been receiving financial support. because American diplomats in Pakistan have been meeting these various opposition leaders for weeks now at different venues, and that's a troublesome and worrisome development. And so what we are witnessing is that another leader of a Muslim country or any other country that wishes to maintain independence is now being targeted by the Americans.
Hey, Mr. Firas al-Najim, welcome to the program. And to Mr. Rangesh's point, when it comes to Muslim leaders, Muslim countries, and sometimes, you know, Arab countries, when it comes to Pakistan in particular, Firas, in its 75-year history, it's never had a prime minister actually finish his tenure, which is wild to think about. Your initial thoughts on what's going on in Pakistan today?
We know very well that the U.S., the way that it works, we've seen what they did in Iraq, we've seen what it did in different countries, in Afghanistan, countries that they invaded and occupied, or in Lebanon, for instance, you know, how they manipulated and play with different political parties. And if the political leader does not comply with their rules and their agenda, then they'll find a way to oust him somehow, or to have the general public against him inside of his country. And that's exactly what we're seeing in Pakistan now, that he, you know, because of the intervention of the U.S. and the relations of the U.S. inside Pakistan and their strength inside Pakistan, that now they're able to lobby people inside of his parliament, inside of his government, to work against him now, because he's not working based on their strategies and the path that they're going on. You know, he refused to, you know, condemn Russia, you know, intervention inside Ukraine. And there's obviously other key things involved, as normalization with Israel as well. They, you know, that Pakistan hasn't accepted that. So all these different things put together, that they see he's not, you know, a submissive, you know, leader and ruler, and he's not working, you know, with what in their agenda.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to check in with both of you, Mr. Zafar Bangesh from Toronto, Mr. Firas al-Najim. They're joining us out of Ottawa. That's it for the segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome, O Month of God. You who have faith, prescribed is for you fasting, as it was prescribed for those who were before you, so that you may be God-weary. The stars have brought the good news of arrival of God's month, the blessed Ramadan. The messenger of mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, gave this good news on the last day of Sha'ban and said, O people, indeed God's month has turned toward you with blessing, mercy and forgiveness. It is the month which the best of months with God, and its days are the best days, its nights are the best nights, and its hours the best hours. O people, it is the month in which you have been invited to God's banquet and have been placed among those deserving the divine magnanimity. Your breaths are considered as glorifying God. Your sleep is worship, your deeds are accepted, and your prayers are answered. In the blessed month of Ramadan, it appears that the faithful have got wings like angels. This is because of fasting, recitation of the Quran, supplication at the divine court, and doing righteous deeds like helping the needy and the poor. As if the dawn was waiting for hearing the sweet supplication called Du'a-i Sahar or Dawn Prayer. The moments of repentance are approaching. God's servants are getting prepared to seek forgiveness through shedding tears in their solitude with God. O God, thank you for keeping us alive to enter the blessed month of Ramadan once more. Everything makes preparations before going to a banquet, and if the banquet is a special one, He will surely make special preparations. Ramadan is the month of God's banquet. To enter a month whose host is God, how should we get prepared? According to Islamic narrations, the 2 months of Rajab and Sha'ban are the prelude for entering the blessed month of Ramadan. Thus, it has been emphasized to observe the fasting of these 2 months. We have been recommended to fast at least one day of these months. The Prophet of Islam said that, all the gates of heavens are open in the first night of Ramadan, and these gates will not be closed till the end of the month. What a beautiful and blessed opportunity, and what a nice period, as God Himself has invited us to get close to Him through worship and penitence. God has placed Ramadan as a pure ocean among lunar months. He has opened the gates of mercy and forgiveness to help humans to speak to Him more. He has commanded them to do obligatory deeds, hold fasting, perform ritual daily prayers, recite the Noble Quran, keep their tongue from lie, gossip, backbite, insult, and other things, tender eyes from forbidden sins, and keep aloof from all other sins to wash their souls and hearts in this ocean. Thus, in the end of the month, the faithful will be expurgated and free of pollutions of sins and look like children. One of the most important codes of entering the month of God's banquet is to give up sins. There is a story in the Islamic history which is worth paying attention. It is narrated that once Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, heard a woman insulting her maidservant while the woman was fasting. The Prophet asked for some food and told the woman to eat it. The woman said in amazement, "O God's messenger, I am fasting." The Prophet said, "How can you insult your maidservant while you are fasting? Fasting is not just abstention from eating and drinking. Indeed, God has made fasting as a curtain against evil deed and word." Then he continued with a sigh, "How small is the number of the fasting and how big the number of the hungry?" The blessed month of Ramadan is a mysterious month which places the rich and the poor in the same status. The poor no more tolerate hunger, while the rich taste hunger and thirst in fasting. In view of this, giving alms to the poor and the needy is highly recommended in this month. The Prophet said, "O people, any one of you who gives iftar, food for breaking the fast, to a fasting person, his reward with God will be that of liberating a slave and forgiving his past sins. Hunger and thirst in the month of Ramadan reminds the faithful of the hunger and thirst of the Day of Judgment. On that day, people's deeds will be calculated and they will be aware of their good and evil deeds. Ramadan is a good period for saving good deeds and refraining from evil ones. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says in his sermon, O people, your souls are mortgaged by your deeds, so clear them through seeking forgiveness. And your backs are loaded by sins, so make them lighter by long prostrations. And know that God has sworn on his dignity not to punish those who maintain prayer and prostrate. And on the day when people stand for calculation before the Lord of the worlds, he will not scare them by fire. The blessed month of Ramadan is the month of revelation of the Quran. Therefore, it is the best opportunity for recitation of this book and pondering on its word. The Noble Quran is like the heart of this month. Getting close with the Quran is among the beauties of this month. The Prophet of Islam says, anyone who recites one ayah of the Quran in the month of Ramadan will have the reward of he who has recited the whole Quran in other month. The Messenger of Mercy has also said, anyone who makes his temperament good in this month, he will have the means of passing over the bridge of Sirat on the day when the steps will slip on Sirat. And anyone who honors an orphan in this month, God will honor him on the day of meeting. And anyone who greets me a lot, God will make his balance heavy on the day when the balance of deeds will be light.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends. Since we are on the threshold of the blessed month of Ramadan, here is food for thought from Imam Reza, peace upon him, the 8th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on the benefits of connecting the month of obligatory fasting by observing fast on the closing days of Sha'ban. God Almighty writes a reward of two successive months of fasting for those who fast on the last 3 days of the month of Sha'ban, continuing with their fasting through Ramadan.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems, questions, and issues parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their offspring. The answers are based upon the noble Quran and the narrations of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam and his holy progeny. We have in this studio our guest speaker, Sister Raldia Batul Najafi. Salamun alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We were talking about some practical points and practical tips how to manage our teenagers' free time. So in our previous episodes, we talked about physical activities, going on traveling or arranging different gatherings. So today in this program, inshallah, we will talk about another issue through which we can manage our teenagers' free time, and that is study, reading books, which plays a very, very vital role in our day-to-day life, in our personality, in our role in this society, in different things. Because reading book means gaining more experience, gaining more knowledge. If you gain more knowledge, your personality will get increased. That's why our Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, all the a'imma and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they have emphasized on, you know, reading the holy book Quran or any Islamic book.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is one of the source of traveling, because when you study something, you are part of that person and that era and that time. Because, for example, when you study about history, you know, so beautiful. And when you said about the studying, I remember the beautiful letter of Imam Ali alayhi salam. He wrote in his letter to Imam Hassan, to his son, that, oh, my son, Hassan, my life is not that lengthy. You know, Imam was only for 63 years in this world. But by studying, by reading the history, I feel I have a thousand and thousand and thousand years, because when I study that nation or that history, I feel I'm the part of them. So I'm telling you, whatever I'm telling you is full of experience of all those, you know, thousand years which I have studied about them. So that much, you know, studying book has impact in human's life. So that is very, very important.
Yeah, I read a statement about Avicenna, you know, Abu Ali Sina, the great Islamic philosopher. He says, our life has two parts, you know, one is working and the other part is studying. Yeah. Either we should be working or we should be
studying.
That much studying has importance.
Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has divided us as a human being, that Ahlul Kitab and none, you know, like Ahlul Kitab, like people of book. Yeah, the human nation, Allah has divided two two portions. One is people of book and one are none, you know, nothing, because they don't have any book. Like book means here definitely the divine books, yeah? Ahlul Kitab, like the people they have Torah, the Bible, yeah, all those divine books. So book, the role of book in human life is very, very vital, yeah, no doubt about it.
But it again depends about how we have brought our children, you know. If for 10 or 15 years or 13 years we have not studied in front of them any book, or we have not read any story for them, or we have not increased this quality in them, and suddenly in our teenagers we say, just come and study this book with me, so it is not possible. So to have a studying teenager, we should work since age 5, 6, you know, since age 2, 3.
Yeah.
So we will take a short break. Inshallah, after break, we will come back.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Dear listeners, welcome back. I remember when our Ali was, you know, 2, 3 years, we used to sit and tell stories,
yes,
read definitely. Storybooks.
Yeah.
So this plays a very, very important role.
Exactly.
If we have put this habit in our teenagers, in our children, so in teenage also they can become a good book reader.
I have seen some very amazing families. They give, gift, very important gifts of their life, yeah, is books. For example, she used to tell me, you know, my children's grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncles, you know, they all send all these amazing, very beautiful books in their birthdays. So usually we choose something, you know, like worldly, not wisely. We choose the gifts. That is very important, because whatever you buy for your children, and especially for your teenagers, so buy something, you know, beside that there should be a copy of books. So if we keep this habit in our life, that means, you know, the children will understand that, oh, you know, big is very big issue in our life, you know, especially as a parent. So book should be there always, inshallah.
And we should be cautious about what kind of book we choose.
Oh, that is very important. Yeah.
Because book and reading is our food of our soul, you know, as we say.
No doubt.
And in the holy book, Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, فَلْيَنْدُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ تَعَامِ. You know,
beautiful.
When it comes to food, how much we are choosy, we are very, very
fussy.
I don't like this taste. It does not suit me. I don't want its taste, its smell.
Yeah,
you know, how
and it's not clean.
Cleanliness
is very important too.
So likewise, we should be cautious about this spiritual food. What kind of book we are choosing for our teenagers,
exactly,
for ourselves.
Nowadays, you know, yes, the selection of toys or books or film and food, everything is very challengeable, because everything is full of, you know, variety. And you have to, you know, it's not like before. Like in every step of life, you have to take the step with full of cautions, because there are so many different thinkers are writing, especially for our teenagers, the novels and the comics, you know, our boys, they love comics. So we have to be very, very careful which kind of comics we are choosing for them.
And for ourselves also, you know, reading a book means, in somewhere I read a very famous sayings of a very famous philosopher. He says, you can't buy the age of a philosopher, you know. For example, if he has spent 80 years, you can't buy his age. But you can buy all his experiences in the form of his book.
Wow. You know,
if you buy his book, means you are purchasing all his experiences.
It's really interesting. Wow. It's really, really inspiring me. So we can just say to our children, to our teenagers, that you can be a richest person by having a lot of nice books collection. And this is a very famous saying that poor people, they have big screen, but rich people have a big library.
Yeah,
so that is the rich man. So you're so rich because you're just buying all the thinkers and philosophers' age and not normal people, the genius one, you know, like maybe 50 years back, the most genius people have written a beautiful books. You can have all the collection of their thoughts. You know,
definitely, in our Muslim societies, we are lacking this quality, you know. Our houses are full of, you know, cinema rooms, you know, screens and laptops. But unfortunately, they don't have a single shelf of books.
Sometimes, in
some houses.
Yes, yes.
And whenever they go to a different city, first of all, they go to the famous shopping center or the famous restaurant. And they never think about to go to a library or bookshop, which shows our mentality. Yeah,
exactly.
Unfortunately, this is a very, very important issue and we should focus upon it. Dear listeners, let's take a short break. We will come back after the break.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in the 80th surah of the Holy Quran, Surah Abbas, verse 24, says, فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِ. So let man observe his food.
Welcome back. Our dear listeners, they should keep in their mind, If they want to grow some good and healthy teenagers, the habit of book reading plays a very vital role in their life. Definitely, we should know our, you know, bookshops. We should take our teenagers once a week, once in a month, once in a year, and take to the good shops where they sell books and to different libraries.
Yeah, and I think if we buy, sometimes they don't like it. We have to take them and let them choose, yeah? And if we don't have enough money, then they can go to the library and borrow the book and go and sit and read the book. So there are so many solutions. Even if we do the same thing, that we borrow some books from their friends and we give our books to them. So they exchange the books from each other. So we shouldn't just take some excuses that, oh, you know, nowadays books are very expensive. We can't take our kids every month to the bookshop, you know. Yeah. I have three kids. How can I buy for them? No, these are all just excuses. You can just exchange with their friends. Yeah,
some libraries, they, you know, give you books.
Yeah.
You can borrow from the libraries, even some shops.
Yeah, if there's a will, cities. Yeah, you will get so many ways. You need that willpower.
And to finish this episode, under the same ayah which I recited from the Holy Quran, فَلْيَنْدُرِ الْإِنسَانِ إِلَىٰ تَعَامِ, there is a hadith mentioned from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, Baqir al-Ulum, where he says, أي علمه الذي يأخذه أمن يأخذه. Here Allah does not mean the physical food.
Yeah.
Here Allah means our knowledge. فَلْيَنْدُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ تَعَامِهِ means the knowledge from where we gain, from where we take. That is very important. Which kind of knowledge we take and from where we take.
So when you say this ayah, yeah, this verse of Quran fits for books and fits for even movies, dramas, films, because the writer is writing sometimes a book, sometimes a movie. So if you are watching a movie with someone who has written, you know, the person who is totally atheist and not having any good values in his life, so that is also very dangerous.
Unfortunately, if we analyze all the Hollywood movies or the movies made in, you know, China, Korea, or these non-Muslim countries, you will find so many things which go against Islam and against our nature and against our religion. So we should be very careful. And this is a very big topic. We can talk a lot, but unfortunately...
How to use the media,
unfortunately,
exactly.
The time is running out. Dear listeners, thank you so much for being with us. If you have any question, comments, or any suggestion, you can write us at englishradio@irib.ir, and you can follow us on our social media, Call of Islam Radio, and you can visit our website, parstoday.com. Until next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With the light.
Ancient Pompeii has a new guardian, Spot, a four-legged robot dog that will inspect the ancient Italian city's streets and tunnels to identify structural issues. The robot, designed by the U.S. firm Boston Dynamics, will patrol Pompeii at nighttime. The robot inspects the smallest of spaces and gathers data for planning interventions to fix safety and structural issues. Equipped with a 360-degree camera, Spot will also protect the city's streets from illegal relic hunters who cause structural damage to the ruins by digging tunnels. Pompeii will also have its own eye in the sky, a Leica BLK-2 flying laser scanner capable of autonomously conducting 3D scans of the ruins, helping Spot carry out its tasks. Safeguarding ancient sites from treasure hunters has always been a problem for every country, especially the ancient ones.
A super rare birth has added a cute member to critically endangered Sumatran rhinos of Indonesia. The newborn calf is the sixth born since intensive efforts to breed the species began in the 1980s. The female calf, which doesn't have a name yet, was given birth to by a rhino named Rosa in a sanctuary. Rosa has suffered 8 miscarriages since 2005 when she was brought in from the wild for a breeding program. Fewer than 80 Sumatran rhinos remain in the world, mainly on the Indonesian islands of Sumatra and Borneo. Excessive poaching, along with other threats, has brought the species to the brink of extinction. The cherry blossom or sakura season in the Japanese capital is a magical experience as trees burst into bloom, dousing the streets with stunning shades of pink. This year, people are enjoying the occasion to the fullest as COVID restrictions are no more there. Thousands gathered in central Tokyo wearing masks, taking pictures and posing for selfies among the trees. Cherry flowers reach full bloom on Sunday, 4 days earlier than usual, according to the Japan Meteorological Agency. The age-old tradition of viewing cherry blossoms typically takes place across the country. The flowers are a national obsession. People flock to parks to hold parties and picnics. However, due to the pandemic, authorities have asked people to refrain from eating and drinking outdoors.
millions of people across the world celebrate Earth Hour, a symbolic Lights Out event that aims to call attention to environmental issues and the necessity of protecting the planet. The annual event encourages people to turn off their non-essential lighting for an hour and take a break from using electronic devices during that period. Earth Hour takes place every year on the last Saturday of March. The theme of this year's event is Shape Our Future and has been celebrated in more than 180 countries, including Greece, France, Thailand, and Iran. The initiative was first introduced in 2007 by the World Wildlife Fund as a grassroots movement for highlighting the collective responsibility of the people towards their environment. An ancient place in Guatemala with special significance for the Mayan culture could be the next entry on the World Heritage List. The historic village known today as the Takalik Abach Archaeological Park was occupied for 1,700 years before it was abandoned and discovered in 1888. It's said to have been home to a pre-Hispanic people. Archaeologists found their way to this mysterious piece of land where they found a series of exotic artifacts and sculptures back in 2008. Guatemala's Minister of Cultural Heritage says this site has a sacred place in the nation's culture.
Takalik Abach is a sacred place with important links to Guatemala's culture. It's a place that harbors flora and fauna biodiversity and even Mayan spirituality and war is wild. This makes this place highly important within the Mayan culture in Guatemala.
Archaeologists believe the monuments go back to the deep-rooted civilizations of Olmec and Maya in a Central American culture around 400 BC. The government has presented the site to UNESCO, hoping it will be declared a World Heritage Site. A Belgian-British teenager is on a solo flight around the globe that could make him a world record holder. Mark Rutherford started his journey from a small airfield near the Bulgarian capital Sofia on Wednesday. His first destination is the island of Sicily in Italy. From there, he'll fly south to Africa and then around the globe to cross the finish line again in Bulgaria. The 16-year-old pilot says he got his inspiration from his sister.
Egypt's rich history seems to be a gift that keeps on giving. The country has unveiled some exquisite, newly discovered tombs. The pharaonic tombs were found at the Saqqara archaeological site south of Cairo. The site is a big necropolis of Memphis, an ancient capital of Egypt. The graves belonged to a senior royal official, or rather senior royal officials. Some of the graves are engraved with interesting titles such as Steward of the Royal House and Supervisor of the Garden. The tombs are around 4,000 years old, dating back to the Old Kingdom of Egypt.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Nowruz, or the Persian New Year, is celebrated worldwide by millions of people, including the people in Indian-controlled Kashmir. The region, known for its natural beauty worldwide, turns magical each year during its spring season. To mark nature's revival, the people of Kashmir have dedicated a day to thank the mesmerizing beauty of spring. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt reports.
As the spring season begins in Kashmir, the earth turns lush green and the trees bear colorful blossoms, with the sky visibly blue and waters clear and glossy. After a not-so-harsh winter this year, the people of Kashmir are welcoming the onset of spring. Nowruz, or the Persian New Year, marks the beginning of spring and is celebrated on March 21st. New trees are planted while people offer prayers and seek God's help for a prosperous year.
Each year, we await this season so that we can plant new trees. The process of their growth gives us hope, and that hope teaches us that God has set a time for everything. We can't fast-track it. We can only do our best efforts.
On the occasion of Nowruz, women in Kashmir prepare unique dishes made from lotus stem and fish. Mehra and her sister have a busy day today. Friends and family are invited to relish the moment.
We have been taught by our mothers and grandmothers to cook these delicacies on the special occasion of Nowruz. It requires lots of dedication, and what matters is that this food brings friends and families together, and a lot of positive energy is exchanged. For us, Nowruz is not just an occasion, but it marks a fresh beginning of love, growth, and prosperity.
On the occasion of Nowruz, the Kashmiri administration often organizes musical festivals to add fervor to the celebrations. People, especially children, visit these musical festivals in large numbers so that the year starts with cheerful memories. This year, scores of tourists have also come to witness Kashmir's spring.
We had heard that Kashmir looks magical, but we witnessed in reality that this land looks fabulous, especially the spring season.
The early arrival of tourists has added a lot of positivity to Kashmir's tourism sector, which has been hit hard by years of political instability and turmoil. Persian culture is deeply rooted in Kashmir, and celebrating Nowruz is a sign of its influence.
Nowruz marks a new beginning, and after suffering decades of political instability and 2 years of the COVID pandemic, people are only hoping for a return back to a normal life and an everlasting peace. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Turkey inaugurates the world's longest suspension bridge over the Dardanelles Strait. The bridge is more than 2 kilometers long and connects Turkey's European and Asian shores. It cuts travel time between the two locations to just 6 minutes. A consortium of Turkish and South Korean firms began constructing the huge bridge in 2017 with a budget of 2.5 billion euros. 5,000 workers participated in the colossal undertaking. Passenger vehicles must pay a fare of 200 Turkish liras or around $14 to use the bridge. In Peru, paleontologists have unearthed the skull of a ferocious marine predator that is an ancestor of the modern-day whale. The 36-million-year-old skull was dug up intact after it was discovered in Peru's southern desert. The fossil belongs to an ancient mammal whose contemporary descendants include dolphins. Recreations of how the animal looked like show it mostly resembles a giant lizard that moved like a snake. Paleontologists say it was a top predator measuring some 12 meters long.
The discovery is very important because the skull is in a perfect state of preservation. The skull and the jaw are in the right anatomical position. The teeth are complete. It's very possible this might be a new Basilosaurus species. If this is so, there is no other fossil like this one anywhere else in the world.
Salas further explained when the ancient animal died, its skull might have sunk to the bottom of the seafloor, where it was quickly preserved. The skull, measuring 1.3 meters long, was unveiled at Lima's Museum of Natural History. The Peruvian desert is rich in fossils and offers scientists 42 million years worth of evolutionary evidence. Other fossils found there include the four-legged dwarf whale and sharks, among others.